Hello, and welcome to One World, One Health, where we take a look at some of the biggest problems facing our world. I'm Maggie Fox. This podcast is brought to you by the One Health Trust, with bite-sized insights into ways to help address challenges such as infectious diseases, climate change, and pollution. A One Health approach recognizes that everything on this planet, the animals, plants, and people, and the climate and environment are all linked. Newborn babies are the most vulnerable of us all. They can't do anything for themselves, and their bodies are not fully developed on the outside or on the inside. They're uniquely susceptible to infections, including the most serious of all infections, sepsis. Infections that affect the entire body, known as systemic infections, kill more than 2 million newborns a year. These systemic infections can lead to a more serious complication known as sepsis, and sepsis affects an estimated 3 million newborn babies a year. More than 500,000 of these babies die, many because the right antibiotics aren't available to treat them. This problem is made worse by the rise of drug-resistant infections. These are a problem for everyone, but especially for tiny newborns. Professor Mike Sharland specializes in pediatric infectious diseases at St. George's University of London. He's been studying this problem and says more testing is needed to find out which antibiotics work safely in newborns. He says it's especially important to come up with clear global guidelines so that healthcare professionals racing to save these infants don't have to experiment on the fly. And he's speaking about this with us today. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you much indeed. My pleasure, Maggie.
Sepsis is a big problem for newborns around the world, but how big of a problem is it?
It's a big problem, Maggie. So there's around 100 million babies born each year in the world. And many of those, over 2 million, die each year of infections. And infections are one of the top three leading causes of death in babies still, unfortunately, right across the world.
Sepsis is one of those conditions that people don't really understand. Is there a difference between sepsis in adults and sepsis in newborns?
There is. So in adults, so the sepsis just really means, you know, infection, bloodstream poisoning, if you like, and or bugs in your bloodstream. And in adults, that's usually secondary to chest infection or a urine infection or another sort of type of infection. Babies are different, and infections from sort of one part of the organ just spreads very quickly through the body. So sepsis, unfortunately, in babies usually is severe, life-threatening bloodstream restriction very quickly indeed, and that's what we mean by sepsis or septicemia or bloodstream infection.
And how does a little baby get this infection?
Yeah, so babies are unfortunately very vulnerable to infection. They have a very weak immune system and they can pick up infections very quickly. And that can be through their skin. Baby's skin is very fragile, very thin, as you know. They can obviously get coughs and colds like other people. And they can also acquire infections in the environment if it's on sort of cots or anywhere else as well. So babies are very vulnerable to infection and pick up infection very easily, unfortunately.
Cesarean sections or C-sections are very popular in some countries. Does that affect a baby's sepsis risk?
They do, and they do impact. I mean, there's a double edge here, isn't there? Because, you know, obviously some, you know, classic infections, group B strep, for example, which is a vaginal sort of pathogen and then acquired as a baby goes through the birth canal, is rates are reduced, you know, if the baby's born by cesarean section rather than sort of kind of vaginal delivery. Some of them, for the great majority of sort of multi-drug resistant infections, you know, Klebsiella and elsewhere, it's still a little bit tricky to work out how much of this is, you know, mother-to-child transmission, sort of through vaginal transmission, and how much of this is related to just being in hospitals and therefore acquiring the infection in hospital. Because if the mother has a cesarean section, the baby's often in the hospital longer, and the big risk of acquiring multi-drug resistance infection is being in hospital. A newborn baby has a basically 20% per day risk of acquiring a multi-drug resistant infection. So if you stay in hospital and more days you're in hospital, then more chance you are of picking up something bad. But the best thing that you can possibly do is to not take your baby anywhere near a hospital unless you kind of have to. The WHO clinical trials are all predicated on making sure that many babies as possible are treated in the community for sepsis and actually not treated in the hospital for sepsis. They don't say the hospitals are dangerous places, but if you look at their trial design, you go like, this is all about hospitals are dangerous places, you know. So the indirect effects probably of the baby being in hospital because the mother's had a cesarean section are probably more important, but the direct effects of sort of kind of a transmission, if that makes sense. the rate of acquisition of multi-drug resistant infection on neonatal units in India and Africa and elsewhere, I look at the data and I just go like, oh my God, my God. You know, these babies are crawling with multi-resistant pathogens from day one, day two, day three. And they're just everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere on the phone, they're on the desk, they're on the cot, they're on the sort of kind of all over everywhere. So it's a real challenge to think about.
And some of the research you've done indicates that these infections might be becoming more common. Why is that? What's changing in society that's making that happen?
I think there's a lot of reasons why things are changing with infections. And this is really what we have to think about is infections in high-income countries, in richer countries, where infections are actually still relatively, so now, you know, still a common, still a threat. But they're most commonly a threat to very premature babies, little babies born on intensive care units with very limited immune systems as well. And there are more premature babies being born. So therefore, there are more infections in babies in high-income countries. In poorer countries, then there are also infections acquired across from the mum or indeed in hospitals as well. There's a big change in the world. And that's all about, you know, globalization and cities. More and more people are living in cities and more people are being born in cities. And we estimate that actually WHO estimates, and the US estimates, that by sort of kind of, you know, 2050, there'll be another couple of billion people living in cities, and young people live in cities. They have their babies in hospitals, therefore, in cities rather than at home.
That's a little counterintuitive because one might think, wow, cities, you know, civilization, hospitals, cleaner. Why would living in cities make this a more common problem?
Yeah, it is. So it's become an ever more common problem. And the difficulty is that infections are therefore becoming more frequent. And also then, because of antibiotic resistance, are getting more and more harder to treat.
And let's talk about that. How many of these infections are drug resistant?
Now a lot, sadly. So some remain sort of still really sensitive to antibiotics. There are a few. There's an infection called, you know, strep, ruby strep, that is a, you know, infection that, you know, mothers can pass, unfortunately, sadly, to their babies. And still, after all these years, it's still absolutely sensitive to penicillin, still, you know, nearly 100% sensitive to penicillin. So it's not all infections that are resistant. But unfortunately, many of them are increasingly drug resistant now, and they are resistant. And these are more sort of kind of what's called gram negative gut infections. And those, particularly some very, very serious pathogens, some serious bacteria, Klebsiella and other ones, are now resistant to the very commonly to most of the usual antibiotics that you would treat infections for first line.
And how can one expect a physician to know which infection this little baby has?
You can't. So you just see a baby who's sick. Unfortunately, babies look really pale. They don't move. They're sort of floppy. They don't feed. And, you know, but that doesn't tell you what it is that's causing the infection. Now, you know, you can do a blood culture. You can do a test for that and have a look at the blood culture and sort of send off a bit of the blood to the lab. But that may take a couple of days to grow, you know, 2 or 3 days to grow. And then, of course, you got to get the results back to you. And that's not so easy in many sites. Many other countries, many other hospitals that have very limited facilities or lab facilities, you can't take any tests at all.
And on top of this, I think there's a problem because there aren't as many antibiotics approved for use in newborns as there are for adults, right?
Well, you could be more clear than that. There are virtually no new antibiotics approved in newborns rather than adults. So we've had only a couple of new antibiotics approved recently, sort of, you know, for newborns. It takes time for adult trials are usually done first, obviously, and that's perfectly right and appropriate. But the children's studies are often delayed quite significantly till the adult trials are completed. And then the baby studies, the newborn baby studies are done, if they're done at all, you know, many years after that as well. So it's not at all uncommon that you won't get a licensed dose or a dose in a baby for maybe 10 years after the drug has been approved in adults.
Okay, this is starting to sound like almost an impossible problem. You've got doctors who don't have time to test these babies to find out what they have. Even if they know what they have, there's a very limited number of drugs they can use to treat them.
It's a really serious problem. And the other part of that, of course, you know, is you've got to get on and treat with your best guess antibiotic straight away. So, you know, sepsis is, an emergency. It's a sort of kind of, it's a medical emergency, needs to be treated with antibiotics straight away. And babies are really, you want to get on and treat them sort of quickly and make sure that you start antibiotics straight away. That's true all over the world when people see a baby who is septic. And it's not uncommon that, you know, so the healthcare workers, you know, can usually make the diagnosis and they understand that they need to give treatment. There is WHO guidelines, you know, for penicillin, very old antibiotic, and gentamicin, and they are usually started straight away. Whether those are, in inverted commas, the right antibiotic is, you can't tell. And that's empiric. That's, you know, your first best guess, if you like, antibiotic treatment. And you've got to get on with that quickly.
Can you tell us a little bit about how newborns are different, even from other children, in how they respond to and process antibiotics?
So the baby's metabolism, you know, the way in which they sort of break down medicines and sort of kind of their kidney excretion, you know, how they do that is generally much also, you know, not as mature as adults or even older children. So, you know, kidney, if you've had a baby, then you know that, you know, the first couple of days your baby doesn't wee. And the reason for that is because breastfeeding takes time to sort of settle and takes time to get going. So it's, you know, babies are designed, if you like, to not wee much in the first few days. So their kidney function is really not good in the first few days of life. It takes time to sort of to kick in. Baby's liver function also is not so great. And that also takes time to mature as well. So you have to be very careful how babies, you know, antibiotics are dosed and then sort of kind of as well in newborn babies.
So that brings us to this question. Do antibiotics need to be tested differently in newborns?
Certainly you have to, the studies, the clinical trials in newborns, you know, that are taken forward by either anybody who is doing research in this area need to carefully look for safety effects and sort of look at the monitoring of those carefully as well to make sure those sort of new drugs coming into babies, you know, are done safely. Equally, it has to be said, the majority of antibiotics that are looked at in children and babies, they have sort of fairly well standard sort of side effects. And it's very unusual to find a different side effect in a baby than you'd expect related to the drug in adults. So I think they're generally predictable. You need to do good studies. You need to do good research to make sure they're safe. But in fact, the antibiotics, you know, are usually, in fact, surprisingly safe, actually, in babies if they're sort of dosed and given correctly.
Your team's doing some of these tests, though. Can you tell us a little bit about the studies you've got going or planned?
Yeah, so I mean, we've had an interest in for quite a while now in terms of thinking through how, what is the sort of kind of the right drug at the right dose, at the right duration to try and treat sort of kind of, you know, sepsis. We're very focused on the fact that, you know, multi-drug resistant infections is now a very serious sort of threat to newborn health. In collaboration with the Global Antibiotic R&D Partnership and a range of other sort of, you know, groups, including the MRC Clinical Trials Unit and other sort of, you know, investigators globally, our group have been working to think through what are the commonest causes of infection in babies now globally across Asia and Africa, South America and China, all over the world. And then thinking through what are the sort of kind of, are there better treatments or novel treatments or new treatments that we can think of? New antibiotics have their place for sure, but there are very few coming through of those. We've been particularly focused on sort of other older antibiotics that have been around since the sort of 70s, 80s, 90s, older, and can we go back to those, and which are generally cheaper antibiotics, and start to use new combinations of those.
You mentioned the MRC, that's Britain's Medical Research Council, funding some of these. It sounds like you've got a lot of nonprofit funding. The drug companies aren't jumping on this.
You are correct. And, you know, and to be fair, in the nicest possible way, then it is a small market. I mean, obviously, you know, antibiotics, there's very little market for new antibiotics anyway. And there is obviously, and that's even in adults, and there's even a less sort of kind of a smaller market in babies, you know. And so I think it is appropriate that they're not-for-profits and others. This is a public health problem. And so therefore, it's correct that public health, you know, funding should come into this area.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this problem.
Happy to do so, mate.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it. You can learn more about this podcast and other important topics at onehealthtrust.org and let us know what else you'd like to hear about at owoh@onehealthtrust.org. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to One World, One Health, brought to you by the One Health Trust. I'm Ramanan Lakshminarayan, founder and president of the One Health Trust. You can subscribe to One World, One Health on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at One Health Trust, one word, for updates on One World, One Health and the latest in research on One Health issues like drug resistance, disease spillovers, and the social determinants of health. Finally, please do consider donating to the One Health Trust to support this podcast and other initiatives and research that help us promote health and well-being worldwide. Until next time.